Welcome to Behind the Scams, a podcast from Stamp Out Scams, where we shed light on the latest scams and threats affecting people's lives. I'm your host, Nick, and as always, I'm joined by my co-host and my lovely wife, Sue.
Thank you, Nick, and hello, everyone. It's so great to be here. We appreciate you tuning in.
Before we dive in, let me mention that Stamp Out Scams is a nonprofit organization dedicated to preventing scams through education and awareness. Today, we're tackling a particularly disturbing topic that's becoming increasingly prevalent in our digital age: revenge porn.
This is such an important issue, Nick. We're seeing more and more cases of people's private images being shared without their consent, and the impact can be devastating.
Absolutely, Sue. What's particularly concerning is how this form of digital violation has become a modern epidemic, affecting people from all walks of life. Today, we'll explore what revenge porn is, its impact on victims, and most importantly, what can be done to prevent it and protect yourself. Let's start by clearly defining what revenge porn actually is. It's the sharing or distribution of intimate photos or videos without the consent of the person depicted in them. And despite its name, it's not always motivated by revenge. It's not just another scam. It's a deadly game that has destroyed many lives.
That's right, Nick. Sometimes it's done for extortion, harassment, or even just for the perpetrator's own amusement. But regardless of the motivation, the impact on victims is absolutely horrendous.
During the pandemic, we saw an alarming surge in these cases. The UK Revenge Porn Helpline reported a staggering 98% increase in cases during the lockdown periods.
The isolation of lockdown created perfect conditions for this type of abuse. With people relying more heavily on digital connections, there were unfortunately more opportunities for privacy violations to occur.
And let's be clear about something. This isn't just about embarrassment. We're talking about a fundamental violation of privacy and human dignity that can have long-lasting consequences for victims.
Exactly. Victims often experience severe anxiety, depression, and in some cases, even PTSD. Many find themselves unable to trust others in relationships again, and some have even lost jobs or educational opportunities when these images surface.
One particularly troubling statistic shows that approximately 1 in 5 adults has been a victim of, or threatened with, the sharing of intimate images without their consent.
And what's equally concerning is how many cases go unreported due to shame or fear of further exposure. Victims often feel trapped, not knowing where to turn for help.
The violation of privacy is compounded by the fact that once something is shared online, it can be incredibly difficult to completely remove. Images can be saved and reshared countless times, creating a never-ending cycle of violation for the victim.
And this is why it's so crucial for people to understand that sharing these images isn't just morally wrong. It's a form of abuse that can destroy lives.
You know, Sue, when most people think about revenge porn, they probably assume it's a relatively new problem that came with the internet. But would you believe this issue actually dates back to the late 1800s? It is mind-boggling how many of the scams and crimes that we think are from the modern era really have their roots in early U.S. history.
Really? That's fascinating, Nick. I had no idea it went back that far. This sort of harkens back to our first podcast, The History of Frauds and Cons. Seems like a lot of these deceptive scams and cons started way before people imagined. It really is scary to think about how long revenge porn has really been going on. It may have not been referred to as revenge porn in earlier history, but it still had the same dangerous results.
Yes, the first documented case was actually in 1888, when a New York photographer started collecting and sharing photographs of high-profile women without their consent. I had no idea it went back that far until I started researching revenge porn for this podcast episode. It really surprised me. Not only surprising, but very concerning as well.
That really shows how the violation of consent and privacy isn't just a digital age problem, doesn't it? Though I imagine the internet has made things significantly worse.
Absolutely. Back then, the distribution was limited by physical constraints. But today, with just one click, an image can be shared with millions of people worldwide in seconds.
And that's led to some significant changes in how we think about privacy rights, hasn't it?
It has. The late 19th century actually marked the beginning of the first right to privacy laws in the United States. These laws were revolutionary for their time and laid the groundwork for much of our current privacy legislation.
But even with these laws in place, enforcement in the digital age must be incredibly challenging.
That's right. The anonymity of the internet makes it much harder to track down perpetrators. And even when we can identify them, the images might already be spread across multiple platforms and jurisdictions.
And I understand that about 1 in 5 adults has experienced some form of image-based abuse. That's a staggering number.
It is, and many victims still remain silent due to shame or fear of further victimization. The digital age has created this perfect storm where images can be shared instantly and permanently, while many of our legal protections are still catching up to the technology.
And social media and online dating have really changed the landscape too, haven't they? They've created new opportunities for this type of abuse.
You're right on the money, Sue. Because what used to require physical photographs and manual distribution can now be done instantly from anywhere in the world. It's made the problem exponentially more complex and challenging to address. Let's talk about some statistics that really highlight just how serious this issue has become. One of the most shocking numbers we've seen is that 1 in 5 adults have encountered revenge porn in some way.
That's absolutely devastating, Nick. That means if you're in a room with 5 people, chances are one of them has been affected by this.
And what's even more concerning is how the COVID-19 pandemic impacted these numbers. During lockdowns, we saw an unprecedented surge in cases.
I heard about that. Can you share some specific numbers?
As I mentioned previously, there was a staggering 98% increase in helpline calls related to revenge porn during the pandemic. To put that in perspective, organizations like the Revenge Porn Helpline in the UK were completely overwhelmed. By August 2020, they had already documented almost 2,000 incidents.
I suppose with everyone stuck at home and relying more on digital connection, it created more opportunities for this type of abuse.
That's right. And here's another troubling statistic. At least 1 in 10 adults have admitted to sharing intimate images without consent. Think about that for a moment.
That's really disturbing. It makes you wonder what drives people to do something so harmful.
Well, there's still such a strong stigma attached to being a victim of revenge porn. Many people feel ashamed or worried they'll be blamed for what happened to them. The emotional toll is tremendous. Believe it or not, this type of shame and embarrassment happens a lot to romance scam victims, so a lot of these types of scams go unreported. So what that means is we're really only seeing the tip of the iceberg here. The cases that get reported are likely just a fraction of what's actually happening out there. So the reported statistics do not tell the true problems in our society.
Without serious intervention.
Expert research suggests these numbers could continue to climb unless we see significant changes in both legislation and social attitudes toward this issue. Now we need to talk about something that often gets overlooked, the devastating psychological impact that revenge porn has on its victims. This isn't just about having private images shared, it's about the deep emotional trauma that follows.
Absolutely, Nick. From what I've learned, victims often experience severe mental health issues. Can you share some specific impacts you've encountered in your research?
The statistics are heartbreaking, Sue. About 30% of revenge porn victims experience clinical depression. Think about that. Nearly one-third of victims find themselves struggling with serious mental health challenges.
And it doesn't stop there, does it? I've heard that many victims develop PTSD.
You're right. Approximately 15% of victims develop PTSD symptoms. They experience flashbacks, anxiety attacks, and constant fear about who might have seen their images.
The shame factor must be overwhelming.
It really is. Many victims describe feeling trapped in a cycle of shame and self-blame. They often withdraw from friends and family, feeling like no one could possibly understand what they're going through.
And society doesn't make it any easier, does it? The stigma around being a victim of revenge porn can be brutal.
That's one of the most damaging aspects. Victims often face judgment and victim blaming. People ask questions like, "Why did you take those photos in the first place?" instead of focusing on the real issue, the violation of trust and consent.
That must make it incredibly difficult for victims to seek help or speak out about their experiences.
Exactly. Many suffer in silence, which only compounds the psychological damage. The isolation can lead to increased anxiety, problems with trust in future relationships, and in some severe cases, even thoughts of self-harm.
It really shows how this crime isn't just about the initial violation of privacy. It's about the long-lasting emotional scars it leaves behind.
And that's why it's so crucial that we talk about this openly and make sure victims know they're not alone. There's absolutely no shame in being a victim, and help is available. Let's shift our focus to the legal side of things. As of 2019, over 40 states in the U.S. have laws specifically addressing revenge porn. But here's the troubling part. These laws often fall short of providing real protection for victims.
That's interesting, Nick. What makes these laws ineffective?
Well, Sue, one of the biggest challenges is enforcement. The internet provides anonymity to perpetrators, making it incredibly difficult for law enforcement to track them down. Plus, many victims are hesitant to come forward because they fear further victimization during the legal process.
Are there differences in how various states handle these cases?
Absolutely. The legal landscape is like a patchwork quilt. Each state has its own definition of what constitutes revenge porn. Some states only address explicit images, while others have broader protections. This inconsistency creates confusion and leaves many victims without clear paths to justice.
I've heard that even when laws exist, prosecuting these cases can be challenging.
That's right. Many laws lack teeth in terms of enforcement. For example, some jurisdictions classify revenge porn as a misdemeanor rather than a felony, which means lighter penalties for perpetrators.
What about international cases? I imagine those are even more complicated.
They absolutely are. When content crosses international borders, jurisdiction becomes a massive hurdle. Countries like the UK and Canada have their own laws, but coordinating enforcement across borders is extremely challenging. It's very similar to the legal issues surrounding romance scams. Most of these romance scammers are spread around the world in places like West Africa and Asia. Trying to prosecute these individuals is next to impossible. Many times, the only recourse is targeting their money mules who operate stateside.
So what needs to change to make these laws more effective?
Several things need to happen. First, we need standardization across jurisdictions. Second, we need stronger penalties that actually deter this behavior. And third, we need better resources for law enforcement to investigate these crimes effectively.
And what about the platforms where these images are shared? Do they have any legal responsibilities?
That's a crucial point. While many platforms have policies against revenge porn, they often hide behind Section 230 of the Communications Decency Act, which protects them from liability for user-posted content. There's growing pressure to make platforms more accountable, but progress has been slow.
It sounds like victims are really caught in the middle of all this legal complexity.
They are. And that's why many advocates are pushing for reform. We need laws that not only punish perpetrators, but also provide clear, accessible paths to justice for victims. Right now, many victims feel the legal system is more of an obstacle than a source of support. Now let's talk about something critically important. What steps should someone take if they become a victim of revenge porn? This is information that could make a real difference for someone listening right now.
Yes, and I think it's crucial to note that while this situation can feel overwhelming, there are concrete actions victims can take to regain some control.
Exactly. The first and most important step is documentation. You need to document everything. Take screenshots of where the content appears, save URLs, record dates, and times. This creates a paper trail that could be crucial if you decide to pursue legal action.
And I assume victims should do this quickly before the content potentially gets removed or spread further.
Absolutely right, Sue. But while doing this documentation, it's important not to share or forward the content, even to prove what happened, as this could potentially violate laws themselves.
What about getting the content removed? That must be a top priority for most victims.
Yes, and most major social media platforms have specific procedures for reporting revenge porn. They often prioritize these reports and can remove content relatively quickly. Platforms like Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter have dedicated teams for handling these situations. One thing to mention is to be very wary of companies that claim that they can completely remove your digital trail from the internet, always for a fee, of course. But many of these companies are scam companies, so people should do a deep dive on any company's background and reviews before engaging them.
But what if the content appears on multiple sites?
That's where organizations like the Cyber Civil Rights Initiative can help. They have experience dealing with content removal across various platforms and can guide victims through the process. They even have a 24/7 crisis helpline. Their image abuse helpline can be reached by calling 1-844-878-2274. This hotline is available free of charge.
Are there other support services victims should know about?
Yes, and this is crucial. Victims shouldn't try to handle this alone. Professional counseling services can help deal with the emotional trauma. There are also legal aid organizations that specialize in these cases and can provide guidance on potential legal actions.
And what about law enforcement? Should victims file a police report?
That's a personal decision. But if someone's considering legal action, filing a police report creates an official record of the incident. It's important to know that some officers might not be familiar with revenge porn laws, so victims might need to be persistent and possibly seek legal representation. But having spent years in law enforcement, I can tell you that victim information and reports go a long way to disrupting crimes. So I highly encourage victims to report scams and crimes as soon as possible. But as I indicated, this is a personal decision.
One last thing. What about preventing further spread of the content?
Good point. Victims should consider setting up Google Alerts for their name and image searches. This can help monitor if the content appears on new sites. It's also important to secure all social media accounts and change passwords just in case accounts have been compromised. Let's shift gears and talk about prevention. You know what they say, the best defense is a good offense. When it comes to revenge porn, there are several crucial steps people can take to protect themselves in our digital world.
Absolutely, Nick. And I think one of the most fundamental aspects is understanding how to manage your personal data online. Could you elaborate on that?
Of course. Think of your personal data like money in your wallet. You wouldn't just hand it out to everyone you meet, right? The same principle applies online. Be extremely cautious about what you share, where you share it, and who has access to it.
And what about specific tools people can use to protect themselves?
Two essential tools everyone should know about are encryption and VPNs, virtual private networks. Encryption basically scrambles your data so only intended recipients can read it, while VPNs create a secure, private connection when you're online.
That sounds technical. Are these tools difficult to use?
Actually, they're quite user-friendly nowadays. Many phones and messaging apps have encryption built in, and VPNs are as simple as downloading an app and pressing connect. You probably weren't even aware of it, but you and I have VPN installed on all our devices, including our computers, iPhones, and iPads. They integrate seamlessly, so most users aren't even aware they are using it. Most importantly, they provide users with protection.
But I think there's a broader issue here, Nick. Technology alone isn't the answer, is it?
You're absolutely right, Sue. Education about consent is crucial, especially for young people who are growing up in this digital age. We need to have open conversations about what consent means in the digital world.
And these conversations need to start early, right?
So true. Parents, schools, and communities need to work together to teach kids about digital citizenship and the importance of respecting others' privacy. It's not just about protecting yourself, it's about creating a culture where sharing intimate content without consent is universally recognized as wrong.
What about password protection and two-factor authentication? Those seem like basic but important steps.
Absolutely essential. Use strong, unique passwords for all your accounts, and always enable two-factor authentication when it's available. Think of it as having both a lock and an alarm system on your house. Multiple layers of security are always better. One thing I have started using recently is an authenticator app. It's another level of security, and they are fairly easy to use. They are available for free in the App Store.
I know you are a real stickler for security when it comes to technology and protecting your personal data. I guess that comes from spending years on a high-tech task force investigating financial crimes during your law enforcement career. I've heard some of your stories, and they are wild. Being on a high-tech task force sounds exciting enough, but being on one in Silicon Valley sounds even more exciting. To me, it sounds like being on a drug task force in Bogota. More crimes to investigate than humanly possible.
Well, you got that right. It was exciting being on a high-tech task force in Silicon Valley during the early days of technology. There was more crime than we could handle. But those stories are for another podcast episode. I did want to say that if someone really wants to share personal photos, then have explicit conversations about boundaries and expectations regarding those images. Consider keeping identifying features out of such photos and discuss what happens to those images if the relationship ends. Prevention is always better than dealing with the aftermath. As we wrap up today's episode of Behind the Scams, I think it's clear that revenge porn isn't just a personal issue. It's a societal challenge that affects all of us.
That's right, Nick. Throughout this episode, we've seen how devastating this form of digital abuse can be, but also how important it is for victims to know they're not alone and that help is available.
Exactly. Whether it's through legal channels, support organizations, or preventive measures, there are ways to fight back against this growing epidemic.
Oh, before we go, Nick, I have one last question. A while back, you did a blog post on our website, stampoutscams.org, about the scam known as sextortion. Can you explain the differences between the two?
Sure, Sue. An awesome question. As explained earlier, revenge porn involves the non-consensual sharing of intimate images or videos, usually by an ex-partner or someone seeking to humiliate, shame, or retaliate against the victim. The goal is often emotional harm or public embarrassment. Now, sextortion is a form of blackmail, where a perpetrator threatens to release intimate images or videos unless the victim complies with demands, which may include money, more explicit content, or other favors. The goal is usually coercion or financial gain rather than public exposure.
Okay, that clarifies it. The bottom line is that both of these are dangerous crimes and can have long-lasting impact on their victims.
You're right, Sue. Both sextortion and revenge porn are crimes, and both can have potentially deadly circumstances. All of us need to be alert to both of these crimes and implement as many preventive measures as possible in order to avoid them. We will definitely be doing an upcoming podcast relative to real victims of both these crimes and the devastating impact it had on their lives. But for now, I want to thank our listeners for tuning in. We appreciate it. We will see you soon on our next episode. This is Nick saying bye for now.
And this is Sue. We hope you learned something about the crucial topic of revenge porn. We have posted a complete revenge porn guide in our Scam Prevention Library page at stampoutscams.org. It is titled Revenge Porn, The Latest Research and Law Enforcement Efforts, and authored by Connor Walsh. It is in downloadable PDF form. Much of the facts and information used in this podcast was derived from Connor Walsh's Revenge Porn Guidebook. We thank him and encourage all of our listeners to check out his very important guidebook. In addition to this podcast and Connor Walsh's guidebook on revenge porn, we have made a blog post on our website about revenge porn. You can find this post on our site's blog page. This is such an important and dangerous topic, we wanted to provide everyone with as much information as possible. Thank you so much from all of us at Stamp Out Scams. See you on our next podcast.